eventually. I promise I'll get
no
it right eventually.
Mouth. It's a new environment here.
And, of course, emails law@liveaudiowrestling.com. Now, we were going to have John Ramdeen from the Fight Network join us, but we're having a little trouble getting in touch with him. But John is quick on the phone, and he's already got somebody else here for us. And this is actually a great guest to talk about some of the stuff that happened last night at UFC 93, because this guy was the associate producer of the UFC primetime shows that set things up, and those were three pretty incredible pieces of television. Ariel Helwani is joining us. Ariel, how's it going, brother?
It's going great. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing very good. Now, you got to work on the whole UFC primetime shows. You got to see it all from the inside there. When it finally came down to the fight itself last night and the way it played out, you know, GSP really dominated. Penn was trying to get the submissions from his back, but really didn't seem to get it together. After all you had seen, were you surprised at how the fight played out last night?
To be honest, no. I mean, I will say that I didn't bet on the fight or anything like that. I tried to stay, despite the fact that I am from Montreal, I tried to stay you know, as unbiased as possible throughout the whole process. But to be honest with you guys, when it was all said and done and I was putting my head on my pillow at the end of the night, I did feel a little vindicated because, as John knows, that show and, you know, even when I was on Fight Network Radio earlier in the week, I felt like we took a lot of unnecessary heat from fans saying that we were painting this picture that GSP was working harder than BJ and all that crap. And, you know, the proof was in the pudding right there. You know, much props to BJ. He worked hard for four rounds, but in my opinion, that was four rounds to nothing. It was complete domination, and the guy who worked the hardest at the end of the day had his hand raised. Mm-hmm. So I felt a little vindicated when it was all said and done.
It's true. And you know, Ariel, you know, it's got to hurt for Penn to lose a fight that way. I'm guessing that's got to hurt for him to, like, not answer the bell. Like, that, to me, for Penn with his ego, I think that's got to hurt.
This is a guy that, you know, I heard countless sound bites from him throughout this whole process. I've never quit. I'll never tap out. I'll never submit. I'll never do all this stuff. I'm a bigger man. I saw George quit against Matt Serra. All this stuff. And then to not answer the bell. I'm not going to say that it's as bad as tapping out, but you can actually make a case that it's worse.
I think it's worse. I do.
The fact that he wasn't the one that did it, I mean, it was Jason Perillo, his boxing coach. You clearly saw afterwards. I think Mike Goldberg said it was his brother. It wasn't his brother. It was his boxing coach.
Right.
That said, that told the Nevada State Athletic Commission official that it was over. But that's pretty bad. If BJ was the one to say I quit, that would have been worse. But, you know, the guy never gave up, and you clearly saw that he was struggling. In his mind, he was probably thinking, what do I have to do to sort of tell these guys that I can't go out there for the fifth round? But, I mean, the guy, I never felt, I'll put it this way, to give BJ the most amount of credit possible, I never felt that he was completely out of the fight. I thought at any moment he could do something incredible because he's that great to turn the tide in his favor. Unfortunately, George was just that much better.
Yeah, I think a big part of it, too, Ariel, was that, you know, conditioning's always seemed to have been a bit of a factor for Penn as well. You know, he never really has to take fights all the way to the end most of the time, and I think that might have caught up with him a bit as well.
You know, in the Sean Sherk fight, I thought his conditioning was pretty great. I mean, when you're boxing, you're obviously not exerting as much energy as when you're, you know, avoiding takedowns as he was last night. But still, he went a full three rounds, and he looked great throughout. But yesterday, and George, I mean, this guy is incredible. Forget about the fact that his English has gone great, but the way he, like, broke it down in that post-fight interview of, you know, trying to stop the blood flow in his shot, I mean, he actually lost me there. I was so excited about everything that happened. But his game plan was incredible. So, I mean, his coaches, his trainers, you know, forget about the fact that they were, you know, maybe cheating throughout the fight, but that game plan was out of this world, and they really did tire him. And, you know, BJ, he definitely looked better than he had, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago when he was 170 and looked a little pudgy. But, yeah, in the fourth round, his eyes were glassy.
Yeah.
He was tired. He was, you know, just grasping for air. And George, at no moment did you think that this guy was tired going into that fifth round. So it was pretty incredible to see how different they were going into that fifth.
Now, Ariel, when you also look at the progression of George St. Pierre, it was really a crossroads for him after that UFC 69 loss to Matt Serra. And since that time, we've seen him defeat guys, and it's almost as if George, he beats them at their own strength. We saw him out-wrestle Josh Koscheck, go on the ground with Matt Serra, and then last night be able to pass BJ's guard seemingly at will. And I think that's one thing that just floors me with St. Pierre, is not only how much he improves, but that it's almost that he looks at his opponent's strength and he wants to outwork them at that strength.
I love the fact that you bring that up, because I was actually watching the fight with three non-MMA fans, and really it was a great example of how great a show like 24/7 or Primetime works, because you get people who aren't fans into the product. And they, you know, I was watching it and watching GSP pass his guard so easily, get into side control, and I was flipping out, and they're like, what's so exciting about this? So I was like, do you understand what you're seeing here? This doesn't happen. This is almost historic. So, yeah, it's unbelievable. And really, when you look at every single fight after that Matt Serra fight, how he was able to neutralize his opponent's strengths, with whether it's out-wrestling Josh Koscheck, whether it's beating Matt Serra at his own game, whether it's doing what he did to BJ Penn last night, whether it's doing what he did to Matt Hughes when they fought again. He's gone better every time out, and I'll put it out there, I'd love to get your guys' thoughts. In my opinion right now, George St. Pierre, pound for pound, the best fighter in the world, without a doubt.
He's definitely up there, man, absolutely.
Without a doubt. I put him number one right now. There's no question in my mind. I'll argue with anyone. He is number one, and Fedor is number two.
I think you have to make that case right now. I mean, you look at Fedor, and I mean the people he's fought in Tim Sylvia and Andrei Arlovsky, and you compare it to George St. Pierre, who I believe Dave Meltzer made this point, which is also very astounding, is that George St. Pierre has not lost a round since that loss to Matt Serra. I mean, he has just dominated every single
person.
Anderson
Silva has lost rounds. Anderson Silva has lost rounds. He lost that first round to Dan Henderson. He obviously lost the first round to Travis Luter. I mean, he's looked great, no doubt, but he's lost rounds. Fedor was losing round one. George St. Pierre, I don't know how many rounds it's been since that loss, maybe like eight or nine or so. He's dominated every single one of those rounds.
Now, what I wanted to get your thoughts too, Ariel, about the complaint from the Penn camp at the end of the fight about the Vaseline. It just kind of sounds like sour grapes.
It does sound like sour grapes, and it's been, you know, it's very indicative of the way the Penn camp has dealt with this whole fight. I mean, they've always kind of looked at little things. They've almost insinuated that George takes steroids in interviews and whatnot. But you know, I look back. It's interesting when I was watching the fight. Obviously, there's so much going on. I totally didn't notice anything happening. But when you look back and watch every single round, there's clearly a lot of stuff happening with that that Nevada State Athletic Commission. I believe he's wearing a red jacket, and he kept telling them, wipe it off. And you could even see as George is getting up, he's getting in there and wiping it off. And Phil Nurse, who's his Muay Thai trainer, was definitely rubbing stuff on his back and continued to do so in between the second and third round as well. I believe it's much ado about nothing, because that athletic commission officer was there. He was wiping it off. So clearly, you know, I don't think that could really, you know, stop George from nailing him with that Superman jab that he did and things of that nature. But it does kind of taint it. I wish it didn't happen, but really, let's look at this, you know, with kind of an open mind here. There's no way that little bit of Vaseline could have affected what happened last night.
Now, you go back to the Primetime show, Ariel, and I mean, BJ Penn, he brought it up, the fact that size really doesn't make the ultimate factor in a fight. But looking at last night, where did size play an issue in the fight and the outcome for George?
Well, I think, first of all, in his ability to take him down in the later rounds, I mean, his strength was just unbelievable. I mean, BJ Penn does not get taken down. That's another thing. I mean, forget passing the guard. This guy, you saw it in the first round, he was hopping on one foot avoiding the takedown. But then after a while, it was almost like George wants to take him down, he takes him down. There was even one shoot where it was like the beginning of that Matt Serra fight, the second one. He just shot and took him down right away. There was no resistance from BJ, and then really when he was, you know, he had full mount at one point, he was in side control, there was really no point where his power seemed to go against him. I mean, you could always say that, I think Mike Goldberg even said, we expected BJ to use his quickness, throughout this fight, and he really didn't. I mean, George was able to be as quick as him, getting to every position, and then once they were in the clinch, he was able to do whatever he wanted. I think he was a little frustrated in that first round that he wasn't able to take him down as easily as he thought. But still, he was damaging him by, you know, the fact that you're trying to avoid this takedown for 5 minutes, you're getting tired. And as he mentioned, his shoulders, something with the blood rushing. I don't even know what the hell he was talking about, but it sounded legit, and clearly it worked.
Yeah. Now, just to finish up with Penn and St. Pierre, you know, as you yourself have said, such a dominant fighter, who do you put up against him next? I mean, it's talk of Thiago Alves, I think, but I mean, really, who do you put up against him?
Well, I think it's pretty clear, and I think it's great that they did that last night. I kind of feel bad for George that they keep, you know, overshadowing his victories right away with bringing his opponent right into the cage afterwards. But I think it's clear they're going to go with the Thiago fight, and I think it's a great matchup because Thiago is a guy like George St. Pierre that, after cutting weight, after, you know, tipping the scales at 170, will come into fight night weighing around 185, 190. That's a big 170 pounder. I mean, that's a guy that could almost fight at 185.
Right.
We know about all his issues making weight in the past. So it's clear that that's the direction that they're going to go. After that, I don't know.
He's pretty much cleaned out the division if he beats Alves.
Yeah, it's tough to see. I mean, I think everyone probably wants to see him fight Anderson Silva. So do I in the back of my mind, but at the same time, I really don't want to see this happen a lot in the UFC. I mean, it's almost as though BJ...
You mean the mixing of the weight classes.
Yeah, BJ kind of willed this thing to happen. And,
right.
And at the end of the day, they made him happy and they gave him the shot, but I don't want to see Anderson go up and fight Rashad Evans, let's say, and see other guys go up and down. It reminds me too much of boxing. The thing I've always loved about the UFC is that there's five title holders, and it just makes it a lot cleaner. And if BJ would have won last night, it would have been an unbelievable story. But then, you know, Kenny Florian or Thiago Alves would have to wait for so long.
Right.
It would be weird and confusing for fans. So hopefully GSP, you know, defends that title against Alves sometime in the summer, and then we'll see from there. Maybe, you know, a new contender will rise out of the ashes of the rest of those
guys. Right, and as you mentioned, it looks like Kenny Florian with Penn for Penn's lightweight title.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think, I mean, much deserved on Kenny's part. He defeated Joe Stevenson. He's definitely the guy. The guy who faced Sean Sherk for that title a few years ago is a totally different fighter now, and he really deserves it. He's developing into a true mixed martial artist at this point. That's going to be an interesting fight because it's always interesting to see how a guy comes back after a loss, and this was a very demoralizing loss for BJ Penn. I wouldn't be surprised if Kenny actually defeats him.
I'm with you. I think the Penn ego has taken a major blow, and it's gonna be hard for him to come back. I think even in the weight division he's the champion in.
We might look back at this moment as, you know, the kind of turning point in BJ Penn's career where it kind of goes down. I don't think he's a special kind of character. He's a guy who's going to rebound from losses, and he has so much pride in himself. But the way he was being last night, after everything that went down in the last few months, like you said, his ego has definitely got to be bruised right now.
Now, I quickly want to touch on a couple of the other fights as well. Finally, we got a finish out of Machida in a fight here last night. It looks like they're going to give him a shot at Rashad, maybe after the Jackson Jardine stuff plays out. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Machida's fight, because I thought he looked really impressive last night.
Well, I did read, I obviously wasn't at the fight last night, but I did read in some of the post-fight notes that Dana White said that if Rampage defeats Jardine at UFC 96, then he will get the title shot. But if Rampage loses to Jardine, then Machida gets the title shot. So it's an interesting situation there. I wish they kind of would have waited till this fight before booking Rampage in another fight, but clearly they were behind the eight ball with that UFC 96 main event. That said, Machida is kind of in this Kenny Florian, John Fitch situation here. Like, you know, he doesn't want to sit out for too long, but now he's going to take a fight if he loses. Also, Carl Prejean was in that position a few years back. If he loses, then he kind of falls back down the ladder. But I'm really happy for the guy. I've actually been one that has actually enjoyed watching him fight. I was at UFC 84. I remember when he fought Ortiz. I thought it was a great fight, despite the fact that some said he was too elusive. And last night, I mean, that knockout was incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, that one punch just totally took out Thiago Silva. I never truly believed that Silva was at the level of Machida throughout all this, you know, the last 2 months leading up to this, and even when they were supposed to fight going into UFC 89. But it was great to see him, you know, kind of finish a fight and say that, yes, I can finish. I am dominant. I can, you know, take guys out who are, you know, at a lesser degree than I am. So it was nice to see. I'm curious to see now where they're going to go with him. They have 1 month till that UFC 96, and I think we'll have a better read on that situation.
Right, right. I guess I'm sure that they were happy in the marketing division that they had a fight finally with Machida, that, you know, that you could actually maybe market him as a fighter who will draw now.
Yeah, and in that post-fight interview, I can almost see the the montages for the upcoming countdown show with him asking the crowd, you know, am I ready for a title shot now? It was like Kenny Florian did a couple of months ago. So yeah, definitely. And you know, it's an interesting thing that I didn't hear many people talk about. If that fight would have went the distance, there's a chance that, you know, the whole pay-per-view would have went past 1 a.m. And I think that they've learned their lessons from the past of going past that satellite pay-per-view time. But things were getting a little testy there for a second there. So who would have thunk it that it would have been Lyoto Machida to sort of save the day. And
end that fight quickly. Yeah, exactly. And one other quick thing, too, just because you were involved with the UFC primetime show, and we saw one of the big stars that was created by TV last night, Stephen Bonner, defeated by John Jones in that fight, and, you know, has had losses to Rashad, Forrest. I know he beat Jardine, but to me it looks like Stephen Bonner, despite being a very recognizable name with UFC fans, I don't know where you really go with him at this point.
Yeah, it's tough because you've used him in this situation now that he's built up a star. So it's like you kind of have to break him down and use him as a stepping stone again. But like, how much value does he have now? I mean, he was out for so long. A lot of people almost forgot about him.
Yeah.
That the only thing that was impressive about that performance last night was that he was able to stick it out for three rounds. But that was, I had John Jones winning every single round in that fight, and I think if John Jones was a little more of a grizzled veteran, he probably could have been able to take him out. Stephen Bonner, we know, doesn't get finished easily. We've seen that, but perhaps just the ring rust and the layoff, had him in there at the end. But I'm not counting him out yet, but losing to a guy like John Jones, a guy that probably 99% of the people watching that pay-per-view had never heard of,
that's right,
is definitely a blow to him, for sure, no doubt.
Now, Ariel, I know you're going to be a little skewed here with this question, but I mean, based on the promotion going into this show, do you feel that this fight is going to surpass a million buys? Because I think it is, which is unbelievable that you put, I don't care what economy you're in, 3 months in a row of doing a million plus buys is something no fight organization, boxing, pro wrestling, MMA has ever done.
I think it will. I don't know if it's going to beat that 1.1, 1.2 number that we're all hoping that it does, but I definitely think it will. And like you said, unbelievable. I mean, we've definitely been spoiled. Personally, and I've said this even, despite the fact that I was working on the show, I don't believe that it was the biggest fight in UFC history. I believe that Lesnar versus Couture is a bigger fight. It meant a lot more because of the fact that it was the heavyweight title, that's obviously the glamour title, and Lesnar was so big with the WWE fans, Couture was coming back. I thought there were a little more storylines there, and this fight, because BJ willed it, it wasn't a fight that the stars were aligning, it wasn't something that had to happen, so to speak, made me not think that it was the biggest fight in UFC history despite the primetime show and all that. But I do think it'll be 1 million. I'm not sure if it will make it and beat that record for UFC 66, but it definitely has made us very spoiled at this point. Now we're coming back to earth. I mean, UFC 95 is not exactly something to write home about. 96 either. 97
is sobering,
okay.
Month coming up.
Yeah,
97 is okay, but I'm waiting for Lesnar Mir too.
Yeah.
That is going to be insane.
And Ariel, just quickly before we wrap things up, is there any thoughts of doing a primetime type show with the Mir and Lesnar? Because to me, I think that's a no-brainer.
No comment, my friend.
Oh,
but a question, Ariel. Dana has come out stating that he could possibly see doing three primetime shows a year. And I know, Ariel, you like myself, have followed HBO, and I would say they've somewhat overdone the 24 concept. And it's something that I think you only want to break out once, maybe twice a year.
Yeah.
I think if you do it three times and you spread it out, January, May, and then maybe one in the fall, you're okay. But let's be smart and look at the calendar. There's one fight that jumps out as the perfect candidate for a primetime show. I think you guys know what I'm talking about.
We certainly do. Ariel, I want to thank you so much for joining us at the last minute like this, for your insights and stuff, and continued success, brother.
Same to you guys. Welcome to a new home. It's great news to have you guys back.
All right,
awesome. We'll have
so
to have
much.
You on a lot more, Ariel. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
All right, there you have it. Ariel Helwani there, worked on UFC primetime specials.